Welcome to Sunday Take for May 31st, 2026. I'm your host, Blaise Olson. This week, we're going to focus on the Republican convention and the Democratic convention. Democrats were in Rochester this past weekend, and Republicans were in Duluth. I was in Duluth because there were more contested races on the Republican side. And frankly, with Republicans not having won a statewide race in 20 years, and the environment being what it is, figuring out how Republicans might try to put up different candidates or see something different this year seemed a little more compelling for the audience. Followed along the Rochester convention closely, and we'll get into some of that. But here's your highlights of the weekend that you should be aware of. In the attorney general's race, Ron Schutz was endorsed by the Republicans. He'll face Keith Ellison in the fall. I think that race looks like it'll just be those two. There won't be a primary between the two of them. In the state auditor's race, which is open, you have Nate George facing off against Zach Flipovich, both two local city officials who know the office well. Since the state auditor deals with auditing local communities, finances, counties, cities, it makes sense that two local officials would be there. And with fraud being on the ballot as an issue, essentially, you're going to start to see, I think, that race get a little more heightened attention. In Secretary of State's race, Republicans endorse longtime candidate Tad Jude. He'll face off against Steve Simon. And then in the Republican race for the U.S. Senate, you had Michelle Tafoya lose to Adam Schwarzy for the endorsement, but they'll go to a primary. And in the DFL side, obviously Angie Craig pulled out last week in a race against Peggy Flanagan. So you have two U.S. Senate primaries. And we'll obviously cover that closely, but I want something to watch is this week, be mindful of how aggressive the ads start to come out, probably on both sides, both races. And this might be the most engaged U.S. Senate race we've seen since maybe 2008. So it's something to watch there. And then as you think about this coming year of elections, know that these conventions showed and reflect the party and the more activist-minded members of the party. For Democrats, Amy Klobuchar faced a more liberal opponent, and that more liberal opponent got 26 or 27% of the vote. It looks like that will be a primary race. And I don't think Amy Klobuchar could be considered in jeopardy of losing, but there's going to be this tension between the far left and the moderate Democrats for sure this year. That's shown in that U.S. Senate primary, and now it might be showing in the governor's race. And so think about the discussions that people are having about candidate quality, about issues, what's on people's minds. And if we know fraud is on people's minds, how does that play out in the Democratic primary? The Republican gubernatorial race is probably one of the most fascinating that I've seen in a while. And I was witness to pretty much the entire endorsement fight on the Republican side. Lisa Damith, Speaker of the House, started out very strong, led for the majority of the first four or five ballots, and was very strong. But due to convention rules, including a drop-off rule, when Mike Lindell had to be dropped off the ballot, what happened was he directed or suggested that his delegates go to Kendall Qualls. That happened. That was traditional party politics at a convention. What we didn't anticipate was major questions about the devices, call them clickers, that folks were using when they were voting. There was significant drop-off in a couple early ballots, which doesn't make sense because the convention floor was very full. Second, the decision to continue to go forward with the clickers resulted in a two-hour delay in voting, which meant people left. The energy left the room. And let's just say that the party that has focused on election integrity created major questions about the own votes of the integrity in their own party. At one point, one of the leaders of the party said, "I'm confident that most of the vote counting has been accurate." And I say that to say that if you're a candidate, most of the vote counting being accurate doesn't give you full confidence in the will of the delegates. That's going to be the subject of this week's take. And the result is Kendall Qualls gets the endorsement. We know Mike Lindell was already going to a primary, even though he threw his supporters towards Qualls, seemingly because he thinks Qualls is a weaker candidate in August. But now, Speaker Lisa Damith has serious reasons to question the process and possibly also run in a primary. I think that is the storyline that will drive this week. It will drive and have a thread through the entire Republican primary. And it'll be the subject of the take this week as well. So we're going to walk you through the show. We have Adam Schorzy, we have Kendall Qualls, and then we have the take. And as part of the take, we have some audio from Mike Lindell. Look, I'm a Lindell skeptic. I don't believe many of the conspiracies that he has raised questions about. But he is a disruptor. However dishonest, misleading he might be, he's a disruptor. And I watched his disruption in real time at the convention this week and how people listen to it, hear it, or tune it out in a way that they don't counter it. And I think that's one of the ways in which the take should be shareable this week, is to make sure that if we're going to deal with people who espouse questionable theories, that somebody's there to push back. So before we get to the take, before we go down that hole, here's my interview with Adam Schorzy. It'll be after the break. You're listening to Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. Welcome back to Sunday Take. My guest this week is Adam Schorzy. He's the U.S. Senate candidate endorsed by Republicans on Friday in Duluth at the convention. Adam, thanks for joining me on Sunday Take.
Hey, good morning, boys. Thanks for having me back on your program again. Appreciate it.
You were on right after you announced. You were the first candidate to announce. What have you learned in the campaign from when you announced to now about the mood of Minnesota?
We were the first campaign to announce statewide, running for office about 3 hours after Tina Smith announced she was vacating her seat. We are kind of preparing, looking at this race as a really viable option to take back to the Republican side. And so when she vacated her seat, we were off the ground and running. And I'm very blessed that we have a high-performing team with a few hundred volunteers around the entire state that's coalesced over the last almost 2 years. And now, as of last night, because I was selected to be the standard bearer for our conservative principles, we've turned that team into an army. It's been a great process, and it's an honor.
When you campaigned and you look at the mood of the state, people might not know you. You defeated Michelle Tafoya in the endorsement fight. There's going to be a primary, but what should Minnesotans know about you, your story, as you get to know them for a primary election and hopefully a general election for you?
Yeah, so thanks. Before any of my military time or anything like that, I came from really humble beginnings and roots. I was actually adopted. I'm only on this planet because my biological mother chose life for me and adoption and sacrifice and endured so I could have a chance. I am blessed that both my adopted and my biological family are from the great state of Minnesota, so I do have two legal families to vote for me in this upcoming election here. But really raised in humble blue-collar roots in east side of Bloomington. I enlisted on my 18th birthday after watching the Twin Towers fall live for my senior English class, and been on a pathway of service ever since. 10 years in the Marine Corps Infantry, a bunch of combat deployments and foreign service time. Came back, got my undergrad at the University of Minnesota, then did another 11 years in the Navy SEALs. In total, 9 deployments over 75 countries. On my way out of the service, I got some higher education degrees in Harvard and international relations. Got a couple of master's certificates as well in nuclear deterrence, international security, most recently wrapped up my MBA at Johns Hopkins, and I'm finishing up a master's in public policy. I thought I'd be debating Tina Smith and healthcare policies. Unfortunately, she stepped away, so it was a lot of wasted education. No, it's good because we got to be smart on healthcare policies. But I look forward to serving Minnesotans. I mean, that's kind of the so what, boys. Since I've served Minnesotans my whole life, I've loved America. I radically love our country, and I'm looking forward to serve just in a different capacity.
What are the issues you heard from delegates that you want to take to the primary and then maybe the general? You talked about healthcare. What are kind of the top three or four things you really want to make sure you focus your campaign on?
Yeah, the three things that I'm going to focus my campaign, number one is the fraud. That is going to be the issue that takes back Minnesota down the ballot. Minnesotans are humble people. We're proud people, though, and we're honest people. And Minnesotans, left, right, center, everybody is embarrassed nationally of the Walls Flanagan fraud and how that happened. And I think to this day, at Blois, I don't think anybody's been fired from the Walls admin yet. Certainly nobody from the Walls admin's in jail. There's just no accountability. So I'm going to work to make sure we have accountability. And I think that'll appeal across the spectrum of wherever you sit politically. Don't we want to know where that fraud went? Don't we want to hold people accountable? Don't we want to have transparency in government? That's going to be, I think, the issue that unifies Minnesotans for change. Also, the deficit spending, as somebody who has been in the military, if everything's a priority, then nothing is truly the priority. So we'd have to have leaders in government that actually know how to make hard cuts and make hard decisions instead of just saying yes and putting multi-generational debt onto our budget every cycle. And lastly, I want to work on the energy sector because I have a nuclear deterrence from Harvard. I know a little about nuclear weapons, but also about nuclear power. And I want to make Minnesota the worldwide leader in nuclear power, leading to SMRs. And then when you have a nuclear power base, you're actually promoting clean energy around the world, and that makes less wars. And I'm also a no wars guy, so I'd like to promote energy, specifically nuclear energy, so we can make Minnesotans wealthy, kind of return to the Jeffersonian doctrine, don't do foreign entanglements, but promote commerce. I think that those things are going to, and I got to make one more point. So you said three, but obviously the Save America Act. I mean, that is something that this U.S. Senate is sitting on right now. 87% of Americans want this to be passed. I think it's egregious that we're not taking it to the talking filibuster so both sides can be held on the record with, hey, why don't we have U.S. citizenship to vote? Why don't we have to have ID? Like, these are things that every American really supports.
You said you're a no wars guy. We have a conflict in the Middle East right now. What are your thoughts on the conflict in the Middle East? Where does it fit in priorities that you would support or not support as a U.S. senator?
Great question. So we definitely can and should have some really great debates probably on processes for these things and the War Powers Act and all those different things. Congress has chosen to give President Trump the authority and the power to continue this conflict. And I am a no wars guy. I lean into that. I think that Iraq was the worst foreign policy decision of my lifetime, having served in all five phases of combat operations in Iraq. But what people don't realize about Iran is I'm a no wars guy. Iran was the number one world sponsor of terror. I lost a brother who got blown up in my arms in Iraq fighting the Shiite militias, an Iranian proxy. I lost SEAL brothers in Syria fighting the Syrian brigades, Iranian proxy. 2 years ago, I lost two of my SEAL brothers off the coast of Yemen combating the Houthis, Iranian proxies. We have cut off the head of the number one world sponsor of terror. The year I was born, 241 Marines and sailors were in their beds sleeping at night doing a peacekeeping mission in Beirut, Lebanon. Over 1,000 of my brothers have been killed by Iran. They will never be able to project power and that evil ever again. And we didn't do boots on ground to do it.
As you talk about no wars, we're in a different global dynamic right now with China, with Russia. You talked about international affairs. Where, as a U.S. senator, do you, if you're elected, do you see the change that America has to take in foreign policy that maybe, no matter who is the president, we haven't changed in 30 or 40 years?
Yeah, I'm really glad I didn't have my bingo card where you lean so much into foreign policy, but I love it. I have deployed more time downrange than anybody in Congress or Senate. And you just heard all my stupid nerd degrees, my education. I'm a warrior scholar. I think it's important we put somebody in the U.S. Senate who's actually been boots on ground, has seen what it's like to actually invest our blood in these foreign wars. And so when you're a parent with a child in the military, I think you look to be like, okay, well, I trust that guy's decision when it comes to where to invest our greatest national treasure, our blood, and our money. I'm a fiscal hawk. So I think it's important that we put somebody in the U.S. Senate who can serve on the Senate Armed Forces Committee, a multi-trillion-dollar budget committee, somebody who's done intelligence operations on no-fail missions. in the intelligence committee. So we make sure we're not continuing to politicize intelligence. We're depoliticizing it like it should be and not collecting information on American citizens. Like, these are great things that I bring to the United States Senate to serve Americans.
My guest is Adam Schorzy. He's a Republican-endorsed candidate for U.S. Senate. We're recording this in Duluth, where he was endorsed on Friday. Adam, let's talk about the economy. It is probably the number one issue on people's minds, whether they fill up their gas or buy groceries. And it's impacting them now, but it's been 6 years of a volatile economy, probably more volatile than in my lifetime or since the 70s when I didn't have to buy the gas and the groceries then, but I remember my parents sitting at the kitchen table talking about it. Talk about what we need to do to change the economy and how you're going to talk about the economy when you're on the campaign trail.
I think Trump, the best metric for future success is past performance. Certainly, I'm an honest broker. Iran is having an effect on our economy temporarily. I think that will be alleviated by the midterm elections. And if you look how Trump performed under his first term, we had a extremely high performing economy. I think we're going to return to that by the midterm election. And where I stand on economics is just get government out of the way, return power to the people, remove federal regulation, empower people. I trust in you, boys. I trust in the American business person who's trying to make a dollar and not the government that put all the red tape. I mean, why are costs so high in Minnesota compared to both our neighboring states? It's because of all the Minnesota red tape. We got to cut that and give people an opportunity to earn and have a living again.
When you lean in, President Trump's approval, just the style of President Trump has not been successful in Minnesota. How do you either shift from that, answer it? Because people are going to ask you that question in a general election if you get there.
Great question. You know, President Trump has not won Minnesota in 3 times. President Trump is not on the ballot. Tim Walz's and Peggy Flanagan's leadership is on the ballot. They're going to have to attest to what their failed leadership and policies accrued in Minnesota. And while Trump hasn't won in 3 times, Trump's policies have been a winner for America. The entire United States has benefited from President Trump's policies. I'm going to continue to support President Trump's policies, but my own political style is obviously different. But I'm a Minnesotan, so I can talk to Minnesotans.
One of the key areas that Minnesota has led on is agriculture policy. Farmers are struggling. Republicans need rural votes, and there's about a 200,000 vote deficit between presidential years and midterms for Republicans when Trump is or isn't on the ballot. What do you tell farmers that you will do in Congress, or what you want to do in Congress, to make sure that they understand you understand them?
Blois, you're speaking to my heart, man, because I've been on the campaign trail so long. I'm up with the people in greater Minnesota call a citiate, self-proclaimed. But I've been on the campaign trail, I think, 80,000 miles already. So I've been to farms in every corner of our state. And I feel their pain. I feel that they're suffering right now. But it's because of the death tax. Where all these corporations are soaking up family farms. They don't know how to pass on their farms to the next generation. And that is a major concern to me, is how we keep family farms in the families. So we need to stop the death tax of these farms. We need to stop crushing farm fields and putting solar on good farming land. We need to stop China from buying up farming land. But the best thing is really just making sure we keep family farms in the families. And then lastly, like everything else, just get government out of the way.
You're going to face Michelle Tafoya in the primary. How are you going to differentiate yourself? And are you concerned about the resources? I know during the endorsement battle, it was hard fought. Her team went after you hard with delegates. It's going to be probably 2 very contested Senate races through to October. How are you going to differentiate yourself with all voters against Michelle Tafoya?
Well, the bottom line up front, boys, is I'm happy to report that the people, the grassroots of Minnesota, are undefeated. Never in the history of the Minnesota Republican Party has the grassroots been defeated. It's never happened where a candidate has gone outside the endorsement for U.S. Senate. It happened one time for governor, never for the U.S. Senate. I'm really proud that I've earned the support of the people here this weekend, and it's just, I'm so blessed. And so that's the pathway for the endorsement. I've got turn my couple hundred people volunteer army into a 2,500 man strong army now as of this weekend, and I think that we're going to get the 19,000 people that came into the caucuses in February. Think about just from a business standpoint how much money you'd have to put in this race to overcome that. And frankly, it doesn't work. Ask John Cornyn in Texas. You can dump $100 million into the race. If the person doesn't have the values, you're not going to win. And, you know, Michelle is the DC establishment. If you are satisfied with the DC establishment, then go with that. But it's just, that's not what's happening all over the country. Is people are going with people that actually are grassroots, have values, stand on principles, stand on morals. And it's going really well because of that. I stand on my principles. I do support life. I do support Second Amendment rights. I do support First Amendment rights. But more important than that is I build high-performing teams. And I'm just blessed that it's going really well.
Adam Schwarzy, I know we'll talk down the line, but thanks for joining me on Sunday Take.
Thanks, boys. God bless.
When we come back, more on the endorsed candidate for governor from the Republican Convention in Duluth. I'm Blaise Olson. You're listening to Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. I'm here with Kendall Qualls as he was just endorsed as Republican candidate for governor by the party. Kendall, what are your emotions right now?
Well, obviously pretty excited. This has been a long road for us, but securing the support from the delegates. The process works, but it takes time, effort, and this is exactly what they want. They need to have energy and fired up about their candidate, and this has been a long road of doing this for the last, say, 2 years or so.
As you think about your campaign, you think about the long day here today, obviously there's going to be a lot of questions about the technology in the voting. What do you want to say to the people who weren't in Duluth about what the convention did today and your confidence in the technology?
Yeah. So what this convention did was validate everything that happened along the campaign trail. We had to have maybe 18 different debates and forums, and of those 18 different, we had straw polls after each one. I won 16 out of 18 of those. So if anything, this is a confirmation of what we've been seeing for the last year.
As you think about the primary, it looks like Mike Lindell will run in a primary, maybe somebody else. How are you going to appeal to the broader Republican voters?
Well, you know, I think my life is already part of the broader Republican voters. This was getting the energy to help it, like, blast off, if you will. And so the broader Republican, when you get this endorsement, which is so significant, that a two-term governor, Tim Pawlenty, couldn't win in the primary, says a lot. And we don't have a lot of candidates running in the primary that are two-term governors right now.
Obviously, fraud is going to be an issue in the primary and the general election. How would you address it as governor, and what would you do differently than even what was done during the legislature?
Well, this is it. This is the issue. In a private sector, fraud is called embezzlement. It's handled much quicker, maybe a year, if less. And we hold investigations, people are fired, and then charges are filed. And it doesn't take 10 years. It doesn't take a separate committee where we hire a staff that to go find something that someone's responsible for doing in their jobs in the first place. This should have been handled 10 years ago by leaders of those commissioners, and Tim Walz should have fired someone for what has happened. Egregiousness, that nothing has been done at a personnel level of leadership. This is leadership 101. It doesn't happen in the private sector this way.
Talk to me about running. President Trump has not won Minnesota when he's run here. He's not very popular right now. How do you appeal to the middle?
Well, Blois, you've known me for a long time. My life is the middle. You know, when you start with nothing in public housing projects, eating government cheese and eating powdered eggs and starting your life, and getting a public school education in inner city in rural Oklahoma, this opportunity of America exists if anybody can get a good education, regardless of their background, and have the grit and the fire and ability to do something different, it's there. But the education's got to be there. And right now, it's not. If I was a poor kid today in Minnesota, I would not have the life that I have now, because I got a better education in the 70s in inner city Harlem and rural Oklahoma.
As you think about, we talked about fraud, but we also, Minnesota has lost its way in a few different ways, test scores, other ways. Is there a timeline that you envision kind of where you want to implement and maybe focus on key issues, and what are they?
Well, it's all hands on deck turnaround. We're at a point where Minnesota is going to fall off the economic precipice of never coming back. So it's all handled, economics, education, the permitting, the regulations, the opportunity issue is a big deal. People want to see relief from property taxes, the crime. So we're going to have an all-star team. This is not Kendall Qualls. This is the team he recruits. And it is going to be like an NFL party. We're going to have a team that can win the Super Bowl before the Vikings win the Super Bowl.
As you think about that team, where do you recruit people from to get them to serve in state government?
Well, it's going to be all factors. First of all, I'm going to start with the candidate pool that's been in this endorsement process, not just for governor, but for Senate and other areas, but also the private sector. You know what? I recruited a guy that was made an example. But when I say an example, I'm talking about it. He was selected as an example of what small business innovation and creativity is all about. And he was highlighted here and is Washington, D.C. He's hired 300 people in the last 3 years. And he wanted to help Minnesota before he had to abandon Minnesota. And we want people like that.
You ran as an outsider, but a lot of the folks who supported your opponent, Lisa Damith, are the kinds of people that usually get recruited into state government. You also talked about a House divided. How do you unite this House when it got pretty spicy at the end of today's endorsement?
Yeah, well, you know, at the end of the day, President Trump had a hard time with the Republican establishment in D.C. But finally, they came around. They helped him. His second administration, much better than his first. That's what I'm wanting in Minnesota. That we have to come to terms that we need to look at something different. And we have legislators that are willing to come alongside me and help. Once a few start coming, the rest starts. It's like that high school dance in middle school when no one's down on dancing on the dance floor and then for a slow song, but the first two couples get out there, then everybody starts coming.
My guest is Kendall Qualls. He has achieved winning the Republican endorsement for governor. We will probably have a primary in the Republican race in August, but we're talking about his vision for Minnesota, how he did it. As we end here, what are the top things that you have heard on the campaign trail that you didn't expect?
You know what? Greater Minnesota feels like they're second-class citizens. Their property taxes, the regulations, they feel like no one cares about them. There are people that have moved, not to Florida, Texas, or Tennessee. They moved to Iowa. They moved to South Dakota. It is heartbreaking that people are leaving their generational homes because they feel like they've been forced out, and they don't care. Now, look, when I was in with large businesses, whenever good people left the company, they did exit interviews to find out what do we need to do to keep good talent. These people had no exit interviews. It was like, you go ahead and leave, we don't care. That's how they feel, and that's exactly what happened.
Kendall Qualls, I know we'll talk a lot down the line, but thanks for joining me on Sunday Take.
All right, boys, thank you.
When we come back, this week's Take.
Welcome back to the Take. This week's Take is going to be a little different because it's a topic we've talked about since 2020, and that is election integrity. And Minnesota has been the center of the noise on election integrity. It's also been the center of the signal. And since signal and noise is the theme of the year, I want to call out the signals, but I want to acknowledge the noise. Mike Lindell, maybe the most preeminent election conspiracy evangelist in our country, hails from Minnesota. He is the CEO of MyPillow. He's a candidate for governor. And at different points in the campaign, there was definitely ways in which he was kept off debates. But he also had a strategy of trying to get his own message out there. I don't find Lindell to be a particularly effective or believable candidate on many fronts. But in my practice of being emotionally unattached, it's interesting to watch him operate. And then just because it's a small world in a small state, I like to point out that Lindell's campaign manager is one of my high school classmates, Ricky Weibel. I guess he goes by Rick now. But Rick Weibel calls himself an election security expert. Weibel has experience in IT. He has experience out there. And I watched the Lindell team work in real time at the Republican convention. And there's no doubt that Lindell plays a little fast and loose with facts. He creates a narrative that is advantageous to him. And frankly, at times it's disturbing. But to watch it in real time, live this weekend, made me really understand how people receive it, how it works. And in this election year, as we look at AI and how it will focus, the original AI are sound bites or stories in elections that may or may not be true, or maybe they're half true. And I think Lindell is the master of that. So after Lindell was knocked off of the ballot, he talked to reporters, including myself, an analyst. And what he espoused was a very fascinating or completely predictable way of thinking about it. I only gave Lindell about 3 minutes because Lindell filibusters, and he'll talk about stuff that has nothing to do with the subject at hand. He goes down rabbit holes. He goes on tangents. And I tried to keep him controlled. But having been a witness at the convention, seeing the tech malfunctions, it was easy to connect the dots that Lindell would raise those questions. That Lindell would be at an advantage because he has used these facts for years. In fact, many people, including Lindell supporters, wanted the whole convention to be paper ballot rather than electronic clickers. They made that argument on Friday. They lost. The rules of the convention were to use the clickers. But when the clickers didn't work in real time, you saw this election integrity issue take hold. It's something we're going to hear about for weeks to come. But I caught up with Lindell, and I want to play that interview before I finish the take. Here's Mike Lindell in moments after being voted off the ballot at the Republican convention because there's a drop-off rule on the fifth ballot. Here's that interview.
Mike, what's your reaction to the convention today?
Well, my reaction was when I found out last night that I was qualified with, what's that word that they use?
Qualified with reservation.
Yeah, with reservation. And I go, and I said, what's that? And you're with reservation. So when I got on the stage, I'm talking about all the things that they did to me,
yep.
Which was, you know, you heard that, right?
Yep.
But I didn't have my stuff because I was so mad and flipped it. And I think it's a circus. I think, you know, for not having someone that's polling number one with the people of Minnesota on three separate polls over the past 8 months, and to sit there and I'm supposed to honor their endorsement and just walk away and drop out. I mean, to me, it's like the RNC when I ran for that. And the night before, Rasmussen poll came out, and I doubled Harmeet Dillon and Ronna McDaniel combined. And the next day, I get 4 votes. And it was on Jimmy Kimmel. He says, Mike, he goes, and then this happened. I said, yeah, Jimmy, once again, the people or the politicians did not listen to what the people wanted.
When you, you've always said you were going to go to the primary, but today, you know, your team directed your delegates to Kendall Qualls. Why'd they do that?
They pointed to Kendall Qualls because at least the Damon's establishment, she's in there. She's done nothing for the election integrity. She's done nothing when she came up with her little committee thing now, and that you're going to go after fraud and prosecute, but you're not going to do it till 2028. That's bizarre. Or next year. I mean, these establishment politicians have let us down in Minnesota for decades.
What do you think of the issues they're having with the technology of voting here at the convention?
Same as all voting machines. I mean, they all have back doors. They're all vulnerable. They're just like any other thing. Isn't it funny? This has been the third day in a row now with these vulnerabilities or what's ever going on. I've seen it before. There were clickers down in Rochester when I went, what has it been now? Maybe it was in 2018 or 2020. And same type of thing. They need to go to paper ballots and count it. I mean, here it would be easy. I mean, you got people counting, it's easy. And you need to have accuracy. You can't see what's inside the machine. We were hearing all day yesterday that people were clicking and it was different. It wouldn't say received, so they didn't know if their vote counted. So yesterday could be completely. If I was one of the candidates yesterday, I would go, show us why these numbers didn't write. These are deviations in numbers. When you have 1,800 machines and you only had 1,600 votes, that's weird.
So as you hear Lindell in that interview, his narrative fits what actually happened, what I saw with my own eyes. And that is the finer point of the take this week. The reality is that we are in a trust recession. I would argue it might be a trust depression. Institutions are not trusted. You've heard me talk about that. But before my own eyes, I watched an institution, the Minnesota Republican Party, conduct an election, an endorsement election in their own system with technology that failed them. Now, did it crash? No. Was it inaccurate? Didn't seem to be. But it failed them because anything that is not perfect in election administration is not good enough in 2026 Minnesota or 2026 America. We've heard rumors and minimal charges of election fraud. We've heard about questionable technology or ballots. But Republicans have to look at themselves in the mirror. And Minnesotans need to be grateful for what we have. I want to learn more about the technology that counties use to run our elections, because after seeing the technology that Republicans used at their convention, I had reservations. Because I am not convinced that it was 100% accurate. And when it takes 10 ballots and just a few votes to push an endorsed candidate over 60%, every vote counts. Now, Democrats also had major, I'll call them major, voting issues. Because why? They too had to reset some of their computers in the first ballot of the auditor's race. And then they re-voted. Both these parties are the powerful. Both these parties dismiss questions about conspiracies. Democrats have dismissed the idea that people would be nefarious in trying to mess with our election system, and Republicans have undermined trust overall in our election system. It's irresponsible. And I'm calling on them all to stop. Instead, I'm calling on independent investigative journalists and tech experts to be called on to find a way to verify and amplify the verification of our election system. Look, I don't like calling out institutions that aren't beyond reproach or are beyond reproach. And I think our election systems in Minnesota are very trusted. I think most voters do trust them. But we can't let the crack become a crevice, become a canyon of trust. We have to dig in. We have to educate. We have to build knowledge to know that your vote counts. Last month, there was a demonstration at the Capitol about online voting. And I was skeptical, but I went and saw it. But I don't know the technology. I don't understand it. And we all know in the age of AI that people are trusting technology less and less. And so I don't care how we administer our elections as long as they can be trusted by both parties, amplified, and that we're engaged in a manner that doesn't undermine trust in democracy. It's America's 250th anniversary. It would be horrific, awful if AI, a distrust of tech, undermined the next 250 years, or for that much, the next 5 months, or 6 months. The narrative of Lindell can't be accurate. Democrats had issues at their convention, but their narrative was they took care of the problem and their delegates trust them. The reality is, It's not about the delegates. It's about the mainstream primary voters and ultimately the general election voters. If they don't trust the system, the risk is too high for us to say it used to be that people were frustrated and they were angry voters and they turned out more. My worry is the next level of frustration is that fewer voters show up and they give up on a system that's 250 years old that we should be proud of, but we should also be able to trust unequivocally. I'm Blaise Olson. That's the Sunday Take for May 31st. I'll be with Vanita at 6:20 Monday through Thursday. It's been a long weekend. I appreciate all the followers, all the subscribers. You can follow all of our work at thedailyagenda.com. We have some convention recaps there for our premium subscribers. And I'll talk to you next week on News Talk 830 WCCO.